You're listening to Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition.
Welcome back to Pull the Line. Today we have a very special guest on. We have Mr. Dana Brunson. Dana, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Thank you for taking the time to sit down and hang out with us.
Yeah, I'm real busy.
Sitting there lounging in front of some historical flash. What do you mean? Someone's gotta guard that shit.
Yeah, we got quite a bit of it. I like it.
Didn't you just get back from a tour of like Italy and
where'd I go? I don't even know where I went. I went to Milan and I went to Paris. Next stop's Bristol, England, Amsterdam, and Romania.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
First Cincinnati convention. So, you know. Oh, I went to Chicago too. Chicago's a monster convention, you know.
I was going to say, didn't you pop into Chicago there?
Oh, yeah. I had a booth. We were busy as hell in Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah, see, so you are extremely busy.
I tried to keep going. I still love tattooing, you know.
Yeah.
It occupies my brain. Nice meeting people that are still into it.
So the first question I like to toss out to people is a little three-parter. One, how old are you? How long have you been tattooing? And how did you get into tattooing?
Okay, I'm 74. I started in 71, and I came back from Vietnam, and I had a year and a half to do at Fort Bragg, and didn't know anything about tattooing because it was illegal in Indiana. So I went with a guy and watched him get a tattoo, and I thought, gee, that's pretty interesting, but I don't think I want any. So after that shop, I managed to go in another shop and arranged an apprenticeship, and that happened to be Spalding and Rogers' old shop. And Dave Paul owned it. He was their apprentice. So I kind of lucked into, you know, good pedigree by accident. I wouldn't have taught me because I didn't have any tattoos. But anyway, it worked out pretty good for me in the long run.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the whole process of getting an apprenticeship like? Because this is obviously, you know, way before even Rich. Quite a while before you ever even got into tattooing. So
like I was born in 71.
Yeah, I was 21 in 71. So it was DC Paul, and there was 200 to 300 tattoo shops in the world at the time. It was almost dead. They were outside military bases and bikers, you know. And so I think he just saw some money, but then of course we became really good friends. But I mean, you know, I didn't have any tattoos and just wanted to learn how, you know, I'd probably throw somebody out of the shop, but, you know, he probably saw some money, you know, all military bases, the GIs are kind of money signs, but fortunately we become friends and, you know, I pursued the career and he knew it and it worked out great for me, actually. I mean, like I said, I always appreciate him taking me in because otherwise, I don't know, I might be a bag man or something.
Yeah.
Who knows? Sometimes a little turn in the road like that changes your whole destiny, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, luck of the draw.
So the whole process of getting your apprenticeship, did it cost you any money or anything?
Yeah, it cost, I don't know, a few $100, but a Battle Royal back piece back then was $350. You know, I was making $75 a week as an E5 in the Army. So, you know, it wasn't much money. I mean, or same as a back piece, which now would be, you know, $2,000 or $5,000, or if you're a superstar, $50,000. But, you know, it was just a few months of like, okay, here, I'll order you a machine. You know, here's a stencil. Okay, you can do some free ones on some GIs. And here's how you make one needle and one shader. I mean, really, really minimal stuff. Basically, here's a machine. Go tattoo somebody, you know.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, these kids today learn, you know, in a year would have probably took me, you know, 20 years to learn.
Yeah.
I can do it now, you know, I can solder needles and mix ink and all that, but we don't, of course. It's cheaper to buy all the stuff.
Yeah. How long of an apprenticeship did you have?
Oh, probably 6 months.
Okay.
Just hanging out the shop after the army during the day. You know, I was there for a year and a half, and I hung out at motorcycle shops, and, you know, I'm into motorcycles, and I hung out at a tattoo shop, and he actually had an old Harley. So, you know, just hanging out. I mean, I was living off post because I was married, so it was just kind of my evening fun stuff to do, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of army crap, you know.
It's kind of a cool overlap there. Obviously, historically, one that has been seen many times over, you know, bikers and tattooing.
Well, yeah, when I got out, it was illegal in Indiana, which I didn't know. So I tattooed underground for 6 years, but I had a motorcycle shop, you know, where I ordered chopper parts and painted bikes and road bikes, and I still ride bikes. And so, you know, I've been riding bikes probably since I was 16 or 17 and tattooing since I was 21. I'll be 75 in September, which is amazing because it doesn't seem that long ago, but it's been a good career, you know. Yeah. I was there when not everybody was there, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, you really saw tattooing when it was in an entirely different paradigm.
Yeah, well, I went to the first convention in 76, and that was all the old guys, and we were the new guys, you know, like kind of black t-shirt group, you know, the young bikers or hippies or whatever. And yeah, so I was fortunate to, you know, be around all those old guys. I mean, not like we were buddy-buddy, but at least I had the opportunity to meet a lot of them, you know. And they're all gone. All my heroes are gone. In the United States, I mean, Hardy's still around, and I know Ed, but not real well. I know Nolan and Raven better. And then Doc Price, he's 92, and he's in England, and he does some tattooing at conventions, you know, just for an animal charity. His son runs a shop. But all the old guard's gone in the United States. Now I'm the old guy, but I'm not really the old guy. I'm the new guy compared to the old guys, you know. Lyle Tuttle, Crazy Eddie, Stanley Moskowitz, Paul Rogers, you know, those guys are all my hero, but they're all gone.
You got to keep in mind, you know, I've said this to you before, like, you're up there with all those guys to me as well. Like, your perspective might be different because you're you, you know?
Yeah, well, I say those are the pirates and I'm the cabin boy, so I don't know what all the new people are. I mean, that, you know, that was a whole different, you know, rough and tumble life, and, you know, it was just a different era. I mean, a lot of those guys work other jobs, and a lot of them are just crazy fuckers, you know. But I like the characters. I didn't give a shit how good you could draw. You know, I thought I could draw by today's standard. You know, I'm clunky. But the characters, you know, it was like hanging out with a bunch of witch doctors or cowboys or pirates. You know, they're just a bunch of crazy guys.
Yeah.
That's what inspired me to get into this, too, is the characters, the eccentric people, the not normies, man.
Yeah, the not cool people. I mean, it was a fun subculture, just like, you know, 1%er bikers is a subculture. Now everybody rides a Harley. Now everybody tattoos. You know, I have to find a new gig or something. I don't know. Now I'm old, so I'm in the old gig, you know, the old group. So that's a new group I'm in.
Yeah. That's okay. You can go teach at the university.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you could. Hell, I don't want to teach. I did a lot better tattooing. You know, I had two shops and 12 artists. And, you know, I went to school 5 days a week and I tattooed 6 nights a week. I mean, there wasn't nothing lazy about me. And, I, you know, a lot of these artists now want to work a couple days a week and do one tattoo. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. That's why I don't have to work now, but I choose to work. But I mean, I'm fine. You know, if I never work again, I'm okay. I saved my nickels. Mm-hmm. And Ohio's inexpensive, you know, so I bought my buildings and, you know, some property, and I'm old and I get Social Security and all that shit. But I still like tattooing. I tattoo every week. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean, I can imagine not wanting to put that down in any way. I mean, well, that's, you know, just that's fun. It's so fun.
Well, it's the people you meet along the way. I mean, you can meet some really interesting people. And like Paul Rogers was a great guy. He'd share all his information with people. And if I can share something with a guy, I don't mind doing that at all. I mean, there's nothing special, you know. I said, getting old's easy. You just don't die, you know. But you know, you can be an asshole about it, or you can be like Paul Rogers. And I'd rather be known as like Paul Rogers, be a kind of a sharing person, you know. No big secret. I mean, it's just stuff you pick up along the way, you know.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to carry some of the old stories. So, you know, I don't think I'm old, but I, you know, at least I got to know all those guys and a bunch of bullshit stories.
Yeah, I love that though. I mean, I love a big part of tattooing that I think is, on one hand, super magical, but on another, a bummer to me, because I wish I could just consume it all on the internet, is that it's all oral history for the most part.
That's yeah, at least down. People start doing books, like when Eddie or John Ryder start doing Dietzel or Burchett books. I mean, at least people started recording it. Now books, you know, I'm doing a book on Don Nolan, and we did one on our family collection. And at least it's shared information. I mean, hell, it used to be you had to buy a book. We didn't have Google, you know, we didn't even have computers. So now it's easy, you know. I've got a big library. You had to have books on everything, you know.
Yeah, I tattooed in that room, surrounded by books.
Yeah, well, I still like books, but hell, usually I Google something. Now, you know, you pull up 100 images in a minute, but I know where all the images in my books are if I need them. You know, I've used them for so many years. And I still buy books, you know, obviously. I mean, you can't draw all this stuff. I mean, there's no sense me trying to draw it. It's been plagiarized since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
And it looks like tattoos. You know, there's a standard iconography of tattooing. Now it's all photorealism, but it doesn't look like tattoos. It's amazing, but it's a different image, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm going backwards. I'm actually liking the real early stuff. And I didn't like that stuff when I started. The Japanese stuff was popular. And that, of course, that still remains, you know, top of the line tattooing. But I like the Americana and European stuff. But, you know, I'm an American, so.
Yeah.
But I like the folk art and all now. You know, it takes you a long time to appreciate those kind of images. You know, you have to go the whole circle from fine art to back to folk art.
Yeah, I'm trying to myself find ways in which fine art can be more impactful on me, because I really have to try and go out of my way to. I'll just stare at Flash all day.
Right.
Well, Flash is great. It looks like I used to look at woodblock prints, you know, right when Japanese was getting popular. So I always loved that stuff, but. As I say, there's all kinds of books in the art library. It's not just all photorealism. You know, there's tribal art and primitive art, and folk art and fine art. And I mean, everybody, you know, thinks realistic art is art. Of course it is, but it's just one facet of art, you know.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying the for everybody. Stuff that you're doing. Sorry, Data.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm enjoying the stuff that you're doing now, the little squiggly ones, the really loose.
Like, yeah, you know, those are just done with a brush or an ink eyedropper, and I saw more of those at conventions. They're just a varied line drawing, and they're fun, but actually they're art because it's just contour line drawing.
Right.
And I take those, and I sell more of those. Like, I sell more of those in Europe and all. And I do them cheap because they're fun and they're easy, but they are a valid form of art. It's just contoured line drawing. And you can't mess them up hardly. So,
so you've been.
Oh,
sorry.
Go ahead.
No. What were you going to say, Rich?
I didn't mean to derail your thought as I'm derailing Mike's thoughts.
It's okay. So you had mentioned tattooing and going to school at the same time.
Right.
That sounds like a fucking lot. That sounds like a.
Well,
ton.
It was. Yeah, I mean, you know, a studio. Class is 3 hours, so if you got 12 hours, you got, you know, 36 hours in, or yeah, 36 hours in art studio, plus, you know, shit you're working on outside of class. And then I'd go work 5 till 9 every night except for Sunday, but I'd usually end up staying there till 11 or 12, you know, drinking beer with a bunch of bikers. I like it. I mean, my grandson's into jazz trombone. Jesus, he puts in so many hours. He's in college now. And, I mean, he just, you know, he's constantly busy, either practicing, playing, you know, studying. So yeah, if it's something you like, it doesn't seem so bad.
Yeah.
Remember that.
How many years did you go to school?
6.5 college.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to undergraduate in Indiana, and then I moved to Texas for 6 months to go to Southern Methodist. But Texas was real expensive. I had a scholarship, so I moved back here and bought in with the only tattoo shop in town. I had met the guy at the first convention, and I applied for the university here and got a scholarship. So, you know, it was kind of a free ride. You know, I could do both and make some money, and yeah.
And that was, you had already been tattooing a while when you came back and got in with that shop?
Yeah, yeah. I got out of the Army in 71, and I moved to Cincinnati in 77. So I tattooed underground, you know, just I had a studio in my motorcycle shop, then I had one at my house. It was almost all bikers. I mean, I'd do a few policemen and all. It was just an old law like New York. You couldn't have a shop, you know?
Yeah.
It was like a misdemeanor, but... you know, I tattooed, made more money on the weekend doing $10 Eagles than I did working all week, you know, so
yeah.
it worked out good for me. Plus, you know, drinking beer and riding motorcycles and, you know, all that shit you like to do when you're young and crazy. Now I still ride motorcycles. I just don't drink beer. So
did you find that hanging out at the bike shop and having pals through bike shit that you're doing, do you think that networking helped translate into tattooing, like people that wanted to get tattooed by you?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was almost all club members that got tattooed. That, you know, there was a subculture, you know, Harley Davidsons and motorcycle clubs. I mean, there wasn't no librarians getting tattooed. You might have one or two wild women or a go-go girl and a couple civilians, but it was almost all bikers, you know. And then I did some of the college professors when I was going to school. But, you know, it's a pretty eccentric subculture, you know, it wasn't mainstream.
Yeah.
It was kind of frowned on, you know, people didn't think you could make a living tattooing.
Yeah, we've talked about that. We've talked about that a few times on this podcast. I mean, I can assume probably for quite a while until like what, maybe like the mid 90s or 80s that was the case a lot of times. A lot of tattooers were.
Yeah, sports figures and rock and roll figures, you know, I mean, that kind of got it out of the box. Or, you know, you see all the rockers were starting to get tattooed. And I think the, you know, rock and roll people did it first. And then, you know, Janis Joplin by Lyle Tuttle and. Yeah, you know, it just Ozzy Osbourne, you know, and then people started identifying. And then, of course, all the sports guys started getting tattooed. And then everybody's grandma got tattooed. You know, yeah. It just became, you know, babies would be born with tattoos pretty soon. I mean, it's really oversaturated market, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, and obviously as that influx came in, that's when I'm sure you could see more and more tattooers only tattooing.
Yeah, oh,
instead
sure.
Of being butchers or mailmen or.
Sure, you know. Yeah. I mean, after college, I mean, that's all I've done is, you know, tattoo. I mean, I never had another job after, I guess maybe when I first got out of college and had the bike shop, you know, I did that. And I worked at a tombstone place for a year when I started college, making monuments. And then I've tattooed the rest of my life. You know, I never had another job.
Yeah. That's so sick.
It was a good kept secret. You know, you tell people there was no business, you're making some money. Right. It depends how much money you want to make. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, crazy money or nothing, but you were working for yourself and having fun. So, you know, I mean, I never set out to achieve, you know, to make a bunch of money or nothing. I just wanted to be comfortable. So it did a lot better than I ever planned on doing, you know.
Yeah.
But I was always happy doing it. So,
what kind of ops? Sorry, what were you going to say, Rich?
I'd say one of the favorite questions I like to ask is, or we ask is, what parts of tattooing culture should be left behind, and which one should go forward or maintained?
What part of the tattoo culture should be left behind?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the old school, of course, wasn't sanitary and, you know, you get your windows knocked out or something. I mean, that wouldn't go over big today.
No.
I don't know. You know, it's going where, I mean, all this fine line, little stuff. I mean, I've done all that. I've done watercolor designs with no outline. They turn to shit. Single needle stuff turns to shit. I think a lot of the photorealism is going to turn to shit. If, the only thing, like Coleman, you know, black outline and a few colors and a lot of black shade, and that's going to be there forever. But then again, it all turns to shit in 100 years, so it doesn't really matter if it floats your boat. But a lot of these people don't know anything about tattooing. As I said, they're artists that tattoo, but they aren't tattoo artists. They buy a pen or a rotary, and they buy cartridges, and they buy ink, and they look at Google, and in a month they're tattooing. You know, but God bless them, you know, but if something breaks, they're in trouble, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And they don't care about the history, you know, which is okay too. But I go for the people that do care about the history. And I'm not a historian. I'm just an old tattoo guy. But the people that are into the stuff I collect and the people I knew, and all, I'm happy to share that with them, you know, because that's a big part of tattooing. I was actually glad to see traditional resurface. You know, it's really popular again.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to die out with the Japanese, and then, you know, it was wizards and unicorns and dolphins, and, you know, and then here come traditional and black and gray back, you know, and then here come Pinterest with little bitty doodles. But, you know, whatever works for you. I mean, I'm not the art police or anything.
Right. I wonder why all that stuff is coming back. And maybe it's because people have seen how it lasts and how the staying power of America.
Yeah, well, you know, peg pants, bell bottoms, duck tails. I mean, you know, everything kind of goes in a circle.
Right.
But like I said, the traditional stuff looks what our mind's eye would say is a tattoo. I always said, if you stick a dagger through it, it's a tattoo. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a dagger on me, you know, but if you see a heart, if you see a heart with mom, that's a tattoo. If you see a photorealism picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger, that might be an airbrushed motorcycle tank.
Right.
So you know, there's still the iconography of panther heads and crawling panthers and all that stuff that's retro, you know. I mean, retro is always comes around regardless what it is.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, it's all fine. I mean, you know, the art's amazing today. It's not my cup of tea. But then again, several years ago, if I could have did it, it probably would have been my cup of tea. I tried, you know, illustrations and lithographs, and they're fun. I mean, it's cool to copy a painting. And these new kids are just illustrators. I mean, they're oil painters and all. You know, I couldn't compete with that.
I like to say that I really enjoy tattoos that look like tattoos, just like you were saying.
Well, I do.
No
too.
Hate against, I mean, anything else.
Yeah, I mean, you see all this black stuff with little tiny white highlights and run through filters. But I mean, I see it in person when I go to Europe, and you see tattoos that blow your mind. I mean, they look like airbrushed arms. And of course, we don't know about the longevity, but it doesn't matter. The technique and all is just absolutely amazing. I can't do it. I wouldn't even know where to start, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody says the pen makes it easier, but, you know, I'm a coil guy. I mean, hell, no sense me changing. I like what I'm doing. You know, I do Japanese and I do vintage traditional. So, you know, I'm kind of get a pick and choose now. But if I had to do big tribal or something, maybe I'd do something different. But it's worked all these years. Why should I change? You know, it don't have to be easier for me. You know, I like tattooing. It's hard, but I think maybe that's me. I don't know.
And also, I just want to say on the resurgence of traditional style, I think people just like old stuff, to be honest. I think a big part of it is they've just realized that it's cool. They're like, oh,
well, yeah, you know, people are drawn to different stuff. I mean, you know, I live in a Victorian house and I'm surrounded by all kind of antiques, and I'm drawn to that. You know, I'm not like postmodern modern. I like houses like that, but personally, I like old stuff. I like old Harleys. I like old cars. I always have. But that, you know, it's just whatever your brain. I don't know. Maybe you relate to something from your past or your parents, or something hit you in the head when you were little. I don't know what it is. Often wonder why we're drawn to certain things, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like it. I mean, it just works for me. Like I said, each to their own. I'm not condemning anybody's stuff. If it stays, it doesn't right. stay. It doesn't matter, you know. It's 100 years, it's gone anyway.
Yeah.
Cliff Raven used to say that, you know, the longevity is better than ice sculpture. So, you know. But it's not going to be a pyramid. You know what I mean? We'll have maybe a little mark in history with a book, but our art vanishes, you know, in 100 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And people are like, oh, it's permanent. Not really.
Yeah, no, it's the only
not
thing you
fucking
can,
really.
Yeah, it's the only thing you can really pick that's permanent. You know, you can't pick your genes or your genetics, I mean, you know. So you can pick a tattoo, good, bad, or indifferent, but at least you can pick it.
Yeah,
right.
I don't think it, I don't know. Nobody needs a tattoo, and nobody doesn't need not to have a tattoo. You know, it's just a tattoo, so.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, you change your opinion along the way. I mean, things that were important aren't important, and they don't have to have some great meaning. It can just be a silly thing, and the experience can be the best part. Doesn't matter if it's a great tattoo. If you had a great experience, that's more fun.
Yeah.
So, you know.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, but it depends what angle you're coming from. You know, I didn't care nothing about old stuff when I started. I mean, old tattooing. I thought I could draw better than all that. I can just draw different, not better, you know.
I like to draw like Dana, and I draw like me, and Mike draws
Yeah. If you copy enough people, you develop your own style. Same as in art school, they teach you to copy everything, you know. But nothing's like super original. I mean, yeah. I don't care what you do. That form of art has been done somewhere, you know, before.
Yeah. It's like in music, they say you'll never play a fucking chord progression that's never been played.
Yeah. I mean, come on, look at art, you know, photorealism, abstract expressionism. I mean, it's all been done. So we're always plagiarizing if we know it or not. You know, we're taking a bit from here, but I deliberately steal everything I can, you know. I can't draw like a 1920 image. That's a whole different illustration. You almost have to trace it because the eyes are too big and the lips are too little, and your brain doesn't want to do that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's hard to pull off funky art, you know. Your brain wants to noodle doodle it up too much.
Dallas Green, a musician that I listened to, once said, good art is borrowed, great art is stolen.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like I said, it's been a great life for me and my family. You know, my son tattooed 25 years, my wife tattooed 30 years, and my grandson's a musician, so that's the end of that. Yeah.
That's so sick, just having a family of tattooers. That's so fucking cool.
Yeah,
I couldn't imagine.
We were really blessed. I mean, our son passed 6 years ago, but he was a big graffiti guy, and he tattooed 25 years and was a great tattooist. And my grandson's never really cared about it, which right now I'm glad he's into jazz music, because there's a lot less of them than there are tattooists, you know.
Especially
jazz trombone and stuff. And you know, you got to find your own way. I mean, I've got all this stuff, but you know, my dad ran supermarkets and was a butcher and into the supermarket industry. I don't know anything about it. You know, it's cool to find your own way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So now I just have to figure out what to do with all this stuff. So
there's a few paintings in your house. I know where they could go.
Yeah. It's easy to get rid of stuff. I mean, even my grandson, I said, well, this stuff can all be turned into money, you know, if you don't want it, but make sure you don't want some of it. I mean, you know, keep the cream of the crop and get rid of the rest of it and let somebody else enjoy it. But if you don't want any of it, that's cool too. You know, I mean, you know, you don't have to like what I like. Everybody likes to turn stuff into money. That's okay. Just take your time doing this so you don't regret it, because, you know, these antique pieces, you aren't going to find them again.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of all that, I gotta say that one of my favorite days spent with you is in your vault. You were showing me all your treasures and stuff, and just a fraction of them, not all of it, but
yeah,
such a good day, man. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I've got stuff everywhere in my house and in the shop and in the storage. But I mean, you know, my son really enjoyed the tattoo history, and so we kind of went nuts buying it, and he was gonna, of course, get all the tattoo stuff. And Now that he's not here, you know, I still love it. I never bought anything to sell it. I bought it because we liked it, you know, and we shared that same interest.
Yeah.
And my wife liked it. So, you know, we just kept collecting and collecting. And now it's, you know, it's hard to collect. Stuff's so expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is your what's the word I'm looking for? Your pride and joy. What's the best piece, your favorite piece you've got?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of those. I've got a nickel on a chain that DC Paul gave me to gap a shade, earn a dime that Paul Rogers gave me that he punched silver contacts out of. Now that's one end of the spectrum. And then the other is, of course, I like Ben Corday sheets. You know, I have a couple original Ben Cordays. I've never been a big machine guy. I mean, I've got Edisons and Liebers and Waters and Wagners, but that come from collecting, you know.
Yeah.
I'm more of a flash guy, you know, and it doesn't even have, I mean, I really love Ben Corday stuff. I don't have any Bob Wicks or Tom Berg. They were wonderful. Burchett, you know, I like. But sometimes it's just a cool unsigned sheet that's just real crazy. You know, I've got some World War I flash that's on canvas that I really like. Yeah, I mean, I could narrow it down to probably 50 pieces out of hundreds of pieces, you know.
I mean, they all have a beat real fast, David.
Yeah, they all have a special place. But I mean, you know, I've got a lot of Spalding and Rogers, a lot of Burt Graham, a lot of Matthews, a lot of Cliff Raven. I mean, I could take two or three of the best and keep them for my grandson. You know, I mean, the stuff's going to go somewhere anyway. So
right.
I know most of the collectors and people that are interested in it, you know, but I'm just not ready to part with it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Understandably.
I sell off old production sheets. I'm getting ready to sell a bunch of Don Nolan originals because we've got the book completed. It should be out in May. And I bought Don's collection to do a book to keep his memory alive. I'm keeping all the personal stuff Don gave me, you know. Yeah. But I mean, I bought a ton of original art and stuff, and you know, I don't have any need for it. I mean, I got the memories.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you can't buy that stuff, you know.
Well, you know, I'm going to be buying one of those books as soon as they come out.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. I mean, they'll be a smaller book, you know. Royal Arts helped with it, and you know, it's a couple hundred pictures of Nolan's, mostly Japanese stuff. Some of his early traditional, but they're hand colored illustrations that he did for people's tattoos. You know, kois and dragons and wizards, and you know, I mean, Nolan was really instrumental in the kind of fine art aspect of tattooing.
Yeah.
But he was the unsung hero, you know. It was Hardy and Raven and Zeke Owen, but Nolan tattooed all those guys, so you know.
Right. I know you told me when you were showing me some of that stuff, some of the originals, that he would do a color rendering of every tattoo.
Everything. Tweety bird to a full back Japanese piece. So yeah, he drew a lot of them on clear, you know, film, then he'd Xerox them, then he'd hand color each little Xerox, and then he'd have the line drawing stapled on it, and then he'd sign them. Yeah, it could be Tweety Bird with a beer mug, or it could be a 100-hour back tattoo, you know, which is way too much work, you know.
imagine some of the newer guys doing that, like literally from a sketch to a full color rendering.
Oh God, he did it for everything, so he could show the. I mean, it was just some OCD thing or something, or staying up too late. But I mean, I'm not going to color Tweety Bird to show somebody, or even a dragon. I mean, I'm too lazy. I'll make it up as I go, you know.
I was going to say, what a fucking work ethic! That's crazy.
Geez, I've just got stacks of little sign-in sheets with line drawings of, you know, I mean, it's just the silliest things. I mean, Nolan was great at the Japanese stuff and traditional, and I have that, but I mean, he was also just a commercial tattooer up until he was 80 years old before he passed. I mean, if you wanted Celtic, he'd do Celtic. If you wanted Tweety Bird, he'd do Tweety Bird. I mean, you know, and he'd do all these colored renderings, which is just crazy, you know. I don't know anybody that does that.
Beautiful stuff, too.
Oh, yeah, man. The Japanese stuff, the kois and all that stuff, they're, you know, he was real instrumental in bringing Japanese work here, you know. First cool tattoo I saw was a Hanya on Cliff Raven, and then years later I found out Don Nolan did it, you know. he worked some on Ed Hardy's arms. He did Raven's back. I've got Raven's back design and the back stencil, you know, an acetate stencil that big. So, you know, it's pretty amazing stuff.
It's a big fucking acetate stencil.
Oh, God. Yeah, I've got back stencils, rib stencils. I mean, Jesus, stencils are hard. I learned on stencils. I'd wipe damn things off, you know. So when you see something that was done with a stencil that big, somebody was pretty clever, you know.
I've done that.
I mean, the Thermofax and all that stuff, of course, you know, spoiled us all. You know, that shit's just hard to keep the image on the skin, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I had it rough when I started with hectograph pencils when there were no
Thermofax
yet. Because those things
were wonderful.
But they were still terrible. But I wanted to try an acetate stencil and I did it once. Man.
Yeah. Oh, I tattooed with acetate. God, I just wipe them off because I like pull lines towards me. Man, I'm just like sloppy. So, yeah, they show Huck Spalding in that movie doing that battle royal on somebody's back. And you're like, dude, I don't think half the people in the world could do that today. You know? I mean, he's just going right through it.
No, and now there's printers. You can just print a fucking stencil directly onto a fucking piece of paper, and it's a stencil just right away.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's got different values of purple in it. I mean, you're printing a purple photograph on somebody.
Yeah, that shit's wild.
Yeah. I hate
a lot of those stencils though. Like, I hate using them personally.
I use a Thermofax. I've got a couple old ones and a new one. But yeah, I just do a line stencil. Hell, I can't do all those values of gray. I mean, we even when they draw them and they look like maps of the world or something. That's a different brain set. Yeah. You know, so many good black and gray and photorealist artists. Shit, if I did that stencil, I wouldn't know if that was a highlight or to color it in.
Right.
So, yeah, there's room for everybody, though, every style, you know.
So to kind of bring things back to what we were talking about earlier with your history in tattooing, what kind of obstacles did you initially face when you got into tattooing? Like, obviously, you being someone who was attending school and or working at the same time, I'm sure was tough, but did you?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I moved to Texas, they wouldn't even rent me a barber shop for a tattoo shop. They didn't want a tattoo shop in town, you know. So you know most of the tattoo shops were in the rougher part of downtown. They weren't ever out in the suburbs, you know. They were always like, you go to the kind of skid row of downtown and you'll find the tattoo shops.
Yeah.
Even when I moved out from my partner in 87, we were just downtown. You know, that we still had one shop downtown in 87. And I moved out 10 minutes out of downtown to kind of a little area. And I thought, man, this better work. But I had worked, you know, 10 years at the other place. So I had clients build up. But yeah, just, you know, I mean, if you went for jobs and you're tattooed, I mean, it was just looked down on, you know, it wasn't an accepted thing like it is now.
Even when I first started, it was looked down upon. And so that's a relatively recent change where things have been completely accepted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now you can't cut on TV you can't go a day without seeing tattoos. I mean, it's amazing. You can't look at an ad on a billboard. You can't watch TV. I mean, you can't watch a cooking show. It's too mainstream for me, but it was good for the wallet, just bad for the business as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It's not spatial anymore. It became part of the uniform.
Yeah. I remember seeing a video, a clip in the Jerry documentary where Lyle talked about baby breastfeeding and seeing a little heart or a swallow or something on its on its mom's chest and growing up a little cockeyed from the tattoo. And that's my generation.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's cool. It's just different. I mean, it's nice. It's so widely accepted, but it lost some of the magic because it's so widely accepted. It's become part of the daily uniform to be kind of cool or to identify. So, like I said, it's wonderful for business, but it made it different, you know?
Yeah, I think it made a lot of people take it for granted. That's for sure. I like to say all the time, people these days treat tattooers like they're the fucking dude behind the counter at Burger King, which don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that tattooers are any more than those people, but like getting
no,
a
I
tattoo.
Agree. No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I used to drive thousands of miles to get tattooed by Raven or Nolan, you know, and now there's a good guy in every neighborhood and people micromanage everything.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I'm not that guy. So, I mean, I can, you know, I never liked people that only did what they wanted to do, but I'm kind of that guy now, you know, but I mean, within a wide range, you know, if it's old, I'll do it. If it's Japanese, I'll do it, you know, but some guys, I only do my drawings. Well, you know, what the hell does that mean? You know?
Yeah.
That's fairly egotistical, but you can do it in your style, you know, but a real tattoo artist usually is pretty versatile.
Yeah.
You had to be, you know.
Right, right. There wasn't a picking and choosing. It was, I need money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly, exactly. So you hone your craft a little bit, learn to do stuff. You know, somebody that's a good technician and then they're a good artist, that's the best of both worlds. A lot of these people are wonderful artists, but they probably couldn't do Tweety Bird. You know, the outline would be scratchy. Right. So if you've got both of it, then you've got the best of both worlds, you know.
Yeah.
If you're a great craftsman. But I do believe the pens make it easier. I mean, I see these kids coloring with big magnums, and it just looks airbrushed, you know. I tried a rotary once, and I didn't like it. I mean, for like 5 minutes. And I thought, gee, I'm just so used to a coil machine, you know. And like I said, you know, I'm trying to keep it kind of traditional. So, you know, I prefer coils, but. You know, Dan Cubans are great machines, Bishops, Cheyennes. I mean, they're all great machines, you know.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to use the old stuff, so it might as well be me.
That's funny. I've kind of gone backwards. I learned on a rotary pen, and then got myself into coils, and I started futzing with a Dan Cuban recently, but
yeah, backwards. I mean, yeah, they're kind of the best of both worlds, as a Dan Cuban. But, you know, I mean, you know, I've talked to artists that's tattooed their whole life, and they say, oh, yeah, this pen just made it easier. You know, I just plugged the needle in, and it's just easier. And I go, well, that's good. But, you know, I don't, how easy has it got to be? I don't know. I think, you know, tattooing's always hard for me, following lines and figuring out what you're doing. But I don't have that much trouble with the machines or nothing. I mean, I know how to set them up, you know. So I think I could tattoo with a pen easier than a pen person could tattoo with a coil, you know, in my own heart, I think the transition would be easier. I can sure in the hell fix a coil machine, you know.
Right.
I would agree with that statement. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's just a different world. I mean, come on, you know.
How far back can you trace your tattoo lineage?
Well, I said I learned from D.C. Paul, that learned from Spalding and Rogers, and Huck. Well, Huck learned a lot from Paul, but Paul worked with Coleman, and so Coleman goes back away. And then, you know, he had got tattooed by Chet Kane. That's what Paul got interested in. So that's okay, but then you got like Moskowitz, you know, they go back to Charlie Wagner, you know, their grandfather learned from, or Stanley and Marvin's dad learned from, you know, Charlie Wagner, Willie Moskowitz. Who else? Let's see. You got Wagner, Keith Wagner. His grandfather was Charlie Wagner's brother. You got Charlene Gibbons. Her mother was Artoria Gibbons. So, you know, I mean, you know, that's as far back as you can go. Hell, damn, turn of the century, you know, Charlie Wagner.
Wow.
I go back to, I don't know when Coleman started, but I mean, that would be the end of my lineage. Coleman to Rogers, Rogers to Huck and D.C. Paul, and then to me, you know, I mean. But I got to meet a lot of cool people, you know, Cliff Raven and Don Nolan. Like I said, I know Ed. I just never got tattooed by Ed. I didn't know him very well at the time. And, of course, he was one of the great tattooists, you know. It was Raven, Nolan, and Hardy, and Zico. And when I started, that was the top of the line, you know.
That's so cool. I've been so stoked to ask you that question all week.
Well, that was it. I mean, you know, I mean, they had their own guys in England, but I think a lot of them copied American tattooing too. They went to a fatter needle. But my first wake up call was going to Chicago to Cliff Raven's shop and seeing Japanese work. You know, that totally went from traditional to freehand Japanese. I'd never seen it. And then, of course, Hardy was doing everything because he was a fine artist. Raven was an artist. Nolan was an artist. Zeke was a great craftsman, you know, military tattooing. But, you know, before that, I mean, it was a lot of guys that, you know, like just stencil guys. I mean, Dave Paul that taught me, you know, he wasn't an artist. He was a craftsman. Mm. Yeah. You got it off the wall or you didn't get it, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of shops are like that.
We've talked about that before. Then I think it's great. You know, there's the, like you said, there's the artist, the tattoo, and then there's a tattoo artist. You know, there's a distinction.
People dinging me for appointments, but I'll figure that out later. Yeah. It's well, like I said, it is, as I always say, it's like a pirate with a lightsaber. You aren't the same as a pirate with a sword. So now we got old tattooists with the traditional stuff, and then we got the new pirates with the, you know, the pin machines and all. It's just different. Doesn't make it right or wrong, but I'd rather get a Japanese Tabori hand done tattoo than a Japanese tattoo done with a machine. You know, somebody's holding on to the tradition.
Right.
But it's all cool stuff. I mean, I you know, I judge a lot overseas in Europe and all, and that stuff, it blows my mind. I mean, they'll do your whole damn leg in 3 days or something. I mean, absolutely beautiful work. You know, it's beyond my comprehension.
It's definitely,
well, they can't buy history. You know, so.
I'm still here. My phone's dead. So my camera turned off. Sorry.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, I'm just fortunate since I'm into history that I got to know a lot of those guys. You know, it'd be harder right now for a young guy that's into history and he's got to talk to guys like me or read about it. You know, I mean, you know, so, you know, I was there with a big group of guys. I wasn't there with Charlie Wagner or nothing like that, but I was there with, you know, Sailor West and Latham Conley and Paul Rogers and, you know, I mean, just a lot of early guys. So I was fortunate and didn't even know it, you know.
So earlier we had kind of just briefly talked about, you know, stuff to be left in the past. What are some things that you think you'd like to see maintained in tattooing?
Well, the history, obviously.
Right.
The beginnings, you know, where, you know, I mean, it's just like history of civilization. I mean, there's got to be books on, you know, folk art of tattooing, or, well, there are a lot of books on tattooing now. That's a good thing. It became so widely accepted. It was kind of an American and a European folk art that was kind of shunned. And now, of course, it's cool. That's why you see the price of all the collectibles going up. And it was always the art. It's just being accepted by society as an art, you know. So, yeah, if the history is preserved and some of the, you know, inventors, creators, but just the whole history, the whole, not so much the history of tattooing. I'm more interested in American and European tattooing, just because that's where I'm from, you know.
Yeah. So. The era of tattooing, which is most familiar, because tattooing can be traced back so far in civilization.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, I'm not a big, I mean, I don't care much about the Iceman or that's so far removed from me. But, you know, you're talking the turn of the century here in America. And, you know, there's history books on everything. So it's so cool that people are doing books and recording all these images. Now it will become commonplace, where before you couldn't find a damn book on tattooing. You know, there'd be Art, Sex, and Symbol or Albert Perry. You know, there probably wasn't a dozen books on tattooing. Now every week there's a new book on tattooing, you know.
Yeah.
So that's cool. It's become part of the mainstream. That's the cool part.
Yeah.
Won't just disappear, you know.
Do you think having the history and the proper representation of tattooing in mainstream, do you think that will kind of, in a way, it'll allow the commercialization of tattooing to not be in vain, so to speak? Like, as long as those little parts can be preserved.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it becomes so mainstream, you know, it has become an industry and it is being recorded and it is being, you know, oversaturated. So it's going to be around, you know, way after I'm gone. I mean, it's always going to be around. But this big fad, I mean, hell, you know, it's so mainstream now. Like I said, it's pretty acceptable. It's gone nuts. I mean, you know, everybody with their faces all tattooed and all. I mean, each to their own. But, you know, this shit's permanent. This isn't like changing from DuckTales to a Beetle haircut. You know, it's a fad that's pretty damn permanent.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not a big fan of all the facial stuff. I mean, you know, I know a lot of guys that did it a long time ago, and that's different. But these young kids doing it like part of rite of passage, or their hands, or their necks, or their faces. And I'm like, dude, you know, this is usually reserved for a really tattooed person that's had a few years to think about. I mean, I've been getting tattooed since 71. I still got a few little spots left, you know. It's not something you run out. These guys that go under anesthesia and do the whole front of them in a day. I mean, what the hell is that about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, at that point, it's not about the process of getting tattooed and what comes with it. It's just about having tattoos.
Which yeah, is, yeah. You know, whatever, yeah, it's like buying a Gucci outfit or something. You know, you've got to fit in. Yeah, I asked Lyle once if there were any characters left, and he said, yeah, probably, but it's hard to see the forest for the trees. Because all those old guys kind of had weird individual stories anyway. They're either veterans or crazy or alcoholics or knuckleheads or carnies, you know. And now it's so many people. I mean, it's going to be hard to stand out. I mean, there's young guys like Philip Liu that, you know, changed the dynamics of tattooing. And, you know, Carrie Barbara is a woman and stuff like that. But Jesus, there's so many good ones now. I mean, it is hard to see the forest for the trees, you know.
Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, who's the best now? You know, who is the best? There is no best, you know.
That's a good question. I guess it depends on your personal taste. Your personal
preference. Exactly. Because there's somebody that specializes in every form of art, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned Philip Liu. I was going to bring this up earlier. A buddy of mine bought a Philip Liu book that he found on a Walmart reselling website, and he got it. And yeah, it was signed by Philip Liu as well as one of Philip Liu's siblings. And yeah, Philip drew like little finger waves in it, and you know, there was a note to, you know, something or other to whoever. Do this, do that, whatever. Yeah, cool little note. And I was like, what? He's like, I got that for $20. I was like, what the fuck?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
you should go cool. buy a lottery ticket.
Oh, shit. You said that in the lottery tonight, and I didn't get a damn ticket. Well, there went that millionaire dream.
Oh, come on. I just reminded you. It's not too late now.
Nah, I'm not going to go. Hell, I just spent $40, I think, the last couple of weeks and didn't even win a dollar. So I'll let somebody else win. I'm okay.
You go get a ticket, and if you win, you buy the tap mansion. We'll get some.
Yeah, I just donate a bunch of it. I mean, I'm living fine, you know. So, what would you do with $1 billion? Hell yeah, you know.
Yeah, right.
I got too much junk now to worry about. I don't, you know. You get to a point in your life, you don't need everything, you know. Usually, when I travel, we live in a hotel room, so you're like, "Wow, I don't." The experiences are the fun part, you know. You can't buy that stuff, so.
So where do you work now? Where have you been working the last, you know, however many years?
Cincinnati, Designs by Dana. I'm 10 minutes north of downtown, a little area called Northside. And I had one right across the river. You know, we're the tri-state area: Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio. So I had one 10 minutes across the Ohio River in Covington, Kentucky, and I sold that a year or so ago to a guy and his wife that worked for me for 20 years. I sold them the building and gave them all the business stuff and treated them real fair on the building, knocked the price down. And then I was going to do that with a couple my son had taught, but I came home and they like, we're going to open our own shop. And I go, yeah, that's a great business move. You know, I'm the oldest shop in town, with a good location and parking. And they're like, yeah, we're going to open our own shop. I'm like, okay, I was going to sell you mine for less, you know, but whatever you got to do. Didn't seem like a great business move. And I don't think it was nothing personal, but yeah. I don't know, you know, I mean, each to their own, you know. I'll just give the building to my grandson. I don't give a shit, you know.
Yeah. Could be pride, you know, but
Yeah, well, I was just selling it for the price of the building. You know, I knocked money off of the price of the building for the young couple that I sold my Covington shop to, and I gave them everything in the building because they were loyal.
Yeah,
and I think loyalty should be rewarded. And I was going to do the same for this couple, but they wanted their own place, so have at it. You know, yeah. I mean, don't let me hold you back. Good luck.
Right.
So, but you know, the building, my building's right on a main street in a nice little, turning now a little more hipster area, you know, from downtown. It was a little weirder when I bought here, but now it's real mainstream, and, you know, the prices have shot up. So, you know, the property's worth whatever it's worth, you know, so my grandson can have it and
won't have to
work for a year or two.
If you ever get down to Cincinnati, Mike, you got to check it out. It's a really cool shop.
Yeah,
it's a little Art Deco savings and loan building.
Yeah, old bank.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a small old bank, but it's a nice building, you know. I lucked into it.
Yeah, I'd love to stop by. I'm actually going to be heading southeast sometime later this year. I'll have to
I've got a few artists coming from Atlanta on Saturday, and they're coming to see the collection. One of them wants a tattoo, and we'll just spend the day telling lies about tattooing. I mean, that's what I do, you know. I mean, I still enjoy it, you know, and I enjoy sharing the collection. And if you want a tattoo, it's cool. And if you don't, that's cool too. I enjoy people that enjoy it, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, we've got a great collection, and why not share it? You know, the people that enjoy it love it, you know.
So I'm curious.
I try to be real open with it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's wonderful. And I think that is a very crucial mindset to people that have as much skin in the game as you, you know?
Yeah, well, we always shared it. And then when our son passed, a friend of mine talked us into doing a book on our collection, you know, because when I get old, it'll be all broke up and divided up. So we did a real comprehensive book. You know, it's a 9-pound book with just flash and machines and photographs. It's almost all gone. I got 30 or 40 of them left out of 1500. So, and it's a one-time printing. So, you know, it was a great book, and it served its purpose. You know, everybody that bought it loved it. So now we're on to the Don Nolan book, you know.
Yeah.
It is a really fantastic book.
Yeah, well, you know, we give the proceeds to my grandson, and we got, you know, it's all recorded, you know, Library of Congress, and that book will be collectible in itself, you know, because there's 1,500 of them made. You know, they're never going to be made again, so.
Yeah, that's so fucking sick.
Yeah. Nice tribute to our family.
Where do you want to see tattooing in 20 years, or where would you hope that it is in 20 years?
Well, I hope the people that are really into it are still doing it, and they aren't pushed out by some flash in the pan. I mean, as, you know, there's new products every convention. Everybody's jumped on the, you know, tattoo lotion, new needles, new pens. It become this big industry. You know, I'm afraid it'd start being like, you know, nail salons. You know, they'll pop up everywhere and the price will drop. And, you know, the people that really should stay in it will get, you know, I know guys now in New York and California, they can't even afford the rent. And they're wonderful artists that's dedicated their lives to it. And then you've got these big cooperatives coming in, renting giant spaces and hiring people, and they don't even tattoo. You know, it's become like a supermarket. So I hope the individuals, you know, maintain, you know, their job and do well with it like I did. But I don't even know if I'd get into tattooing today. It's just a different mindset, you know.
Really? Well, I'm not really in disagreement with that, because I agree with that. But you saying that you don't know if you'd get into it these days.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd do. I still like vintage motorcycles. When I go to antique motorcycle shows, the crowd hasn't changed like a tattoo convention. You know, still guys that love vintage motorcycles. I go to a tattoo convention and nobody gives a shit about vintage anything except for a handful of people. You know, it's me and Instagram and all that. And it's kind of sad, but I mean, that's progress. you know, I'm not weird about it. It's just what it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've always looked at it as kind of a double-edged sword in how tattooing has become so commercialized. 'Cause, I mean,
well, it is.
It's the only side of tattooing I know. Obviously, I'm very green, so that's all I have ever known, but I'm conscious enough to and aware of history enough to know that it wasn't always like this. And
well, no, I mean, we were the only shop in Cincinnati in 77, and now there's 250 shops. I think Rome's got like 2,000 shops.
Oh,
you know, it's getting so oversaturated that the price for the guys trying to make a living, you know, they can't do it. You know, I mean, Paul Rogers used to build machines. Now you have big giant companies investing in ink and machines. You know, how are you going to compete with that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still guys doing it. You know, there's a lot of young guys, you know. I mean, I've got a lot of machines, you know, Seth Ferry, Mike Pike, Kevin Riley, Burt Crack. You know, I mean, I still like really good machines, but I bought every machine known to mankind over my career, I think. So, but, you know, everything's, well, hell, now it's hard to even see a coil machine at a tattoo convention. You know, somebody's coming out with a new rotary. And that's just, you know, out of my brain. I mean, I don't know. It's cool in a way and it's sad in a way because I spent 1,000,000 hours trying to learn how to tattoo, you know.
Yeah.
Still trying. But everything changes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Absolutely. It's the only thing guaranteed.
Yeah, but I mean, every week somebody's like, hey, my cousin draws, they want to get into tattooing. You know, where they wouldn't even have thought about it 100 years or, you know, 50 years ago. I mean, Jesus, it was spooky to go in a tattoo parlor. And those guys still made good livings around military bases. But now it's become this superstar, you know, thousands of dollars a day. I mean, who in the hell charges that? You know, they forget where they come from. Most of them, don't have another job description. You know, I'd be working at McDonald's or something. So some of them don't appreciate what they've got, I think.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's very true. I agree. I think a lot of people let that get to their heads and they develop rock star itis.
Yeah, they do. And I'm like, dude, you're an illustrator. You aren't Michelangelo. Come on.
Right.
I mean, you know. I mean, just keep it in perspective. You know, don't bullshit the bullshitter. You know, I've seen good art, you know. So, you know, if you're lucky to be a wonderful artist, then appreciate it and treat your clients fair and make whatever you got to make, but don't be nuts. I mean, you know, or be nuts if that's your personality. There's some young kid working at McDonald's for a month to pay me for a tattoo. And, you know, I was that kid basically years ago, you know, making 75 bucks, you know, as a grown man. So, you know, I always appreciate people spending their money.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Giving their money's worth.
I mean, to you, it's something you might forget in a day, but to them, it's an entire experience. And like you said, hours and hours of work.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, come on. There's guys several hundred dollars an hour. That's fine. Some people have to pay those gigantic rents. You know, like I said, Ohio's a lot more conservative. So, you know, you got to give people their money's worth.
Yeah.
And the new superstars weren't every day in tattooing anymore. You know, some kid riding a tractor that's probably, you know, photorealism, you know. But yeah, like Paul Booth was a killer illustrator. Philip Liu was a killer illustrator. You know, Paul Jeffrey, Shutzi Gorman. I mean, you spell name them. Jesus, now there's 1,000,000 of them, you know.
Yeah, I remember going to one of the shows in Chicago, just walking through the aisles. I'm like, I don't know any of these people.
Oh, that's me, and they're doing work that just blows your mind. I mean, you know, I used to go to Mexico, and there'd be like one shop in Mexico, and maybe somebody doing bootleg. And now, look at the beautiful black and gray. You know, there'd be all these guys from Mexico with a whole wall, and it's like Jesus, genetics or something. I mean, just absolutely beautiful work. You know, and there's like 1,000,000 of them all of a sudden. You know, I mean, you know, it's weird. You know, good for them. Really blown up. And these big corporations are buying up all the tattoo, you know, suppliers and all. I'm still trying to buy off of some individuals, you know, these big conglomerates. I can't even say it anyway. Investment groups. you know, I'm not trying to support them. They're $1 million industries, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So you got the little neighborhood guy still struggling to make ink or build machines. That's a guy I want to support.
Yeah.
Totally. I get a lot of my stuff from Bickney, that, you know, that's a smaller guy.
Yeah. Rich, I just got Rich a bunch is a of cool stuff. Cat. Yeah. I get from Bickney and I get from Aaron Bloomquist, you know, Eminent. Yeah. 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 Rich just brought me a bunch of stuff down. I've known Rich forever. Aaron used to work with Jerry Rieger, does, you know, really fair prices. And, you know, there's a lot of good ink people out there now. You know, I don't really use a lot of Waverly, but I really like Bill from Waverly, and I will use it. But I have to use what my artists like. We still use a lot of Eternal, but I'm trying to phase out into some of these individuals, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Eternal used to be owned by a guy, now it's a corporation.
Yeah, a lot of the big companies.
Yeah, there's a whole like weird thing. Like the guy, the chemist who created Eternal now is doing Fusion, I think. I think he's still doing it. I switched.
Yeah, well, that Nexus group bought out Eternal, Pat Soul, Critical, Kingpin. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just bought up everything. So all of a sudden it'd be on Amazon. You know, I mean, the needles are already made in China. You know, you couldn't even buy a damn needle bar for what a whole needle cost back when I was learning. So that's the good part. You don't have to make that stuff. The bad part, you don't have to make that stuff. You know, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
I'm just glad I'm where I'm at. I enjoyed it and I still enjoy it and I don't have to worry about it. I do feel sorry for guys I know in New York, California, high rent districts that are getting, you know, put out of business.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm lucky because, you know, I do traditional, but people here go to a young guy to get traditional. And I'm like, well, it makes sense to me. They want the young, cool guy. But I mean, come on, I'm a traditional tattoo artist, but it's okay with me, you know.
Yeah.
I said, I've had my good times and I still tattoo as much as I want to. You know, hell, I just travel in Europe and tattoo. They like to collect from an old guy now. So, yeah, you know, I've had the best of both worlds in this career.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. That's so fucking awesome.
Well, I've been real fortunate. I mean, some of it's luck and a lot of it's hard work. You know, I didn't work 2 days a week or one appointment a day or something, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say you were lucky, but you worked really hard to get to live how you've lived.
Yeah, I mean, we do third generation, you know, tattoo people. I mean, a woman, you know, called today. Hey, I heard, you know, you're the shop to go to. We're just kind of like a Cincinnati staple. Nobody knows if I'm Dana or the girls that work for me are Dana. It's just known as a good shop. You know, that's right. What you want. It's a good reputation, you know.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, it's just certainly different now, you know.
I was going to say, I know that I love watching you and Dot travel the world and do all the things that you wanted to do. And I thoroughly enjoy watching you enjoy life.
Well, it's kind of escaping from life. Like I said, after losing our son, what else are we going to do? You know, we love to travel anyway. But if my son was here and he was still in the shop, I'd be home a lot more. But it's a nice escape from reality, to tell you the truth. And it's still fun to meet nice people. There's still nice people out there and people that give a shit. And that's the people I'm looking for. If I meet one a year, it's okay. Or if I meet 12 a year, it's okay. But the rest of them, I don't have time for. You know, I'm getting too old.
It's always insane to me the amount of really amazing people that you can find in tattooing. I guess maybe because for me personally, like, you know, coming into the game, I was always kind of made to be under the impression that, like, there's a ton of shit bags. And, like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. No career or craft or industry has any shortage of those. There's no shortage of assholes in the world in general. But, like, oh, by God, man.
Well, yeah, look at society. Jesus, you know. But there's still good people out there.
Yeah, totally. And there's so many gems in tattooing, so many fucking wonderful people that I've met from tattooing that
not only amazing tattooers, but like I said, clients, you know, it makes you a better person. You know, I mean, like I said, I misjudge people, and then at the end of the day, that's the best person you've met.
Yeah.
So then you reevaluate your own stupid brain. And it is the journey, I think. I mean, the picture is a real nice byproduct. But I'd much rather get tattooed by a shitty tattoo artist that I like than the best guy in the world with an ego. You know, it's just a damn picture to me.
I agree.
Yeah.
As well. Should be a fun experience for the client and you, you know.
Yeah, totally.
I'll never understand the artists that put their earbuds in or headphones in, just ignore the client. I'm like, man, that's like you're missing half of the whole experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you're missing somebody else's stories and things that can help you be a better person and, you know, give you compassion and empathy. But, you know, I mean, I was young. I mean, I never did that because I always liked what I did. But some of these people, it's just about the money and how cool they are. You know, who's cool? The client. Because without the client, you can't be cool at all. You know? Mm-hmm. You know? And to them, it's important. It doesn't matter if it's a little tiny tattoo or if it's a photorealism back piece. You know, it's, you know, tattoos just represent so much to different people. So, you know, just don't get full of yourself. I mean, you know, I've had my day where you're thinking, yeah, I'm pretty good at this. Then here comes 3,000 guys rushing by you. But like I said, it's a business. It's not just the print picture. It's a business, you know. Great lifestyle.
Yeah, everyone's people like talk about retiring. I'm like, you can't really retire from what you are.
No. If I couldn't tattoo, I'd still go to tattoo convention. You know, like Lyle never quit going to conventions, and Eddie never quit going to conventions.
Right.
It's just, you know, you're sharing some of that fun stuff. I mean, you're just immersed in it, you know? Yeah. I don't ever plan on really quitting. I mean, maybe if I live to be 100, I'll quit. I can always do a doodle on somebody, but I enjoy, you know, the camaraderie. I enjoy sharing, you know, what I learned. I mean, for the people that are interested and like I said, I feel like a new guy. I mean, believe it or not, you'll turn 74, 75 in a blink of an eye. I don't, you know, I should really be 50 or 60 or something.
The exponential nature of time. It's terrifying.
Yeah, well, I'm lucky. I'm still real healthy and Dot's healthy. And I mean, you know, we don't have any problems. So, you know, why not? Hell, my college professor is 94 and he went through cancer, but he still makes art every day. Come on. Wow. How lucky is that? You know?
Yeah, no shit.
And he's killer. You know, he's killer artist. So, yeah, that's a role.
What were we saying yesterday, Dana, between like on the messenger, like mentally, you're like 5, you said?
Yeah. First I said I'll be about 50, but I'm probably really more like 5. I'm living proof you can have a master's degree and not be that clever. You just have to find what you're into. You know, I about flunked out of high school because I was just drinking beer and chasing girls. You know, Dot and my son and all were, of course, honors students. My grandson's an honors student, but I'm more of a matter of fact guy, you know. I don't care shit about algebra and I still don't.
Yeah.
Me neither.
I'm living proof you can live to be 74 and not know algebra. I've flunked out of that so many times, you know.
That's so funny.
So I tell people when their kids are in trouble in school, I go, well, you know, I almost got kicked out of high school and I did great in college, but you'll find your way.
Yeah. You know, we always do.
Yeah, we aren't all cut from the same cloth. So, you know, if you're a postal digger, it's okay. Just be happy.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing that's going on in society today. Like if I got this, if I achieve this goal, I'll be happy. If I achieve this goal, I'll be happy. I'm like, no, you should really be happy with the fact that you're steering yourself toward goals.
Yeah, I was happy all along. When I could buy a 6-pack of beer and live in an apartment, I was happy.
Right.
And now I own a couple of buildings and I don't even drink. And you know, I mean, except for, like I said, losing our son, of course, was the worst thing you could happen in your life. I'd trade everything in my life for that. But we did far better than I thought we'd set out to do because we didn't set out to do nothing. Just live and have a decent life, you know.
Yeah.
And it turned out, you know, it turned out great. I mean, at least we're old and we don't have to work if we don't want to. That's cool, you know.
Yeah. Expectation is the killer of joy.
Yeah, well, everybody wants to be, you know, instant famous. I mean, come on, go do some work or something, you know, earn something. I mean, you know.
Chop wood and carry water to chop wood and carry water.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah, I'm not scared of working. I was over cleaning my shop today. Got a ladder. I cleaned all the windows. you know, first thing I do is clean the bathroom. I mean, that's all part of tattooing, clean shop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just don't forget where you came from. Yeah, sometimes it just takes people a while. It's all so new and so exciting. And some of them will come around. That'd be cool, you know. I didn't give a shit about history when I started, or I'd know more. So, you know, there's still hope.
Well, it wasn't history when you were living it.
Well, but the guy, you know, but like Dave Paul had, you know, been a Korean War veteran. There was a guy named Diamond II Smith that had this kind of real early stuff on him that hung around. I didn't ask those guys questions. God, if I'd have been smart, I could have probably bought so much shit. You know, the house would have exploded because nobody really gave a shit about tattooing back then. It was just, you know, products you used. You know, nobody cared about an old machine or, you know, that's why Lyle was so small. He started buying it up real early.
Right.
Because he loved it. He didn't buy it as an investment. He loved it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you still see a smile on Lyle's face if he got something new, you know. And he wasn't out selling stuff for the money. He just loved this stuff, you know.
I miss that dude.
Yeah, I do too. He's a cool cat. Like I said, now there's a guy, he always said, well, if it wasn't for the right place at the right time, I'd do stick people. But he was the epitome of cool. You know, you can't, like you said, you can't buy cool. He had the look, he had the brain, he had the, you know, location, and he knew it, you know, so he enjoyed it. Not the world's best tattoo artist, and far from the worst, but probably one of the most respected, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I really liked Lyle, Crazy Eddie, Stanley Moskowitz, Paul Rogers. He was an epitome of a nice guy, you know. I mean, Paul lived in an old trailer and handmade machines, you know, for $250. Now they're $5,000-$6,000.
Wow.
But he was just, you know, he was almost like Will Rogers. He just had that country spun charm. So it was a pleasure to know all those guys. You know, I'm honored to have even have met them.
Yeah. That's so sick. That's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's more my family than my family. You know, I've got one brother left. So, you know, he doesn't even have a tattoo. He'll be 80, you know.
It's not too late.
No. I tattooed my kid brother, but he passed during the COVID stuff. And my dad didn't have tattoos. My mom didn't have tattoos. But, you know, it's all okay.
Yeah.
So now you guys are doing podcasts. Come on, recording old guys. You know, I mean, it's all important to those that it's important to.
Right? Yeah. It's you super know, the rest important of them, to us.
Yeah, the rest of them, I could give a shit less. If it was all egos and, you know, photorealism, I wouldn't even go to a convention. You know, I don't have nothing to contribute and I don't have nothing to take away. So, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, that's a very valid point in and of itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on, you know, I don't go to real, I mean, if I went to a realistic oil painting show, it'd be for me to look, you know, I'd gain from, you know, from the art, but right. There's nothing I want to gain from tattooing except meeting a few nice people. And if you can help somebody out, like you said, mentally, physically, business-wise along the way, you did okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the ways that we can give back to tattooing, that anybody can give back to tattooing.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, my son suffered from depression and I've met a lot of, you know, a lot of artists are crazy. I mean, I'm crazy. And, you know, if you can shed light on something for somebody, I think you did, you know, you did your part for the world. You know, sometimes that's a rough road, but, you know, I'm always here to help somebody out if I can, you know.
Right. Yeah. That's wonderful.
I said, I've got everything else. I don't need nothing. I don't even need, I'm not even going to go get a damn lottery ticket. I'm fine.
I've been saying this a lot lately is, you know, being kind is free.
Yeah. It is free.
It's not that hard to just be kind and just, you know, loving and caring. It's not that.
Man, it makes somebody's day. If somebody smiles at me and they're nice, man, it just sets the mood for the day. And I sure in the hell don't need more junk. I mean, you know, being happy with what you got, no matter how much you got, that's a place to be. And that's hard to achieve. So, you know, we finally achieved that. I don't need a new house or a new car or new clothes or I don't need more tattoo stuff. You know, I mean, I just need some fun and some nice people. You're only going to take your memories with you, you know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely true. That's or funny.
Put all this tattoo stuff in a big hole next to me. I don't know.
throw it in a vacuum sealed bag.
Yeah, have it cremated with me. Just turn it into ashes, you know. I know.
Keep saying, there's a few paintings in your living room that I had a really good home for.
Which is like, yeah, hey, chill.
You know, I love all that stuff, but it's just stuff. You
and
know,
I think like Dana said, knows specifically what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, it's not hard to get rid of cool stuff. But like I said, you know, at the end, I'd trade every bit to have my son back, or any loved one would trade something. So you got to keep it in perspective. If all you're about is money and you're an asshole, you miss the best part of life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Amen.
So sometimes you got to step back and just think how lucky you are. I'm still lucky, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've caught a lot of grief in life, but also in my stint of tattooing. I've caught a lot of grief for being the very outgoing, optimistic, more kind person that I am versus like having a tougher shell and, you know, kind of sticking and staying in my own lane or whatever. Like I literally have had people, I've had tattooers give me grief for reaching out to other tattooers on the internet to hang out and paint.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the way it ought to be. I mean, it's so open now. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can open up next door to me. I don't give a shit. You know, I'm not threatened by nobody. You know, it's, you know, because I'm at a great place in my life. Unfortunately, you have to be 74 to be there, or I did have to be. But yeah, I mean, hell, I'm friends with almost all the tattooers in town. Any tattoo artist is welcome to come in my shop. I'll show them the collection, you know, shoot the shit with them. If they, you know, if I don't get along with somebody, that's on them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, Paul Rogers was the epitome of that. You know, Philip Liu, guys from all over the world, go to Jacksonville, Florida, just to visit this old guy in a trailer, just to learn something and to enjoy him, you know. And he was just the epitome of that, being a nice old guy. I mean, God, nobody's ever said nothing bad about Paul Rogers, you know. I don't think I'll have that. I think there'll, you know, be people going, that old bastard Dana, but that's okay too. I don't care.
That won't be me.
Nah, well, I mean, the good thing is I won't care. old age has its privilege. I don't care.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't have to make everybody happy and you don't have to like everybody. You just get a little microcosm.
Well, this may be cheesy, but you've, you know, meeting you has brought me nothing but joy.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, you and your family are awesome.
I've enjoyed knowing you. You know, I enjoy the people I meet. I mean, you know, that's what it's about, really. I wish I was a better artist. I wish I was a little more clever, but you know what you are, and you do the best you can. And like I said, the best part is just living the life, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, building the community, making the friends.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the best part of life, Jesus. I mean, we're all blessed with different abilities, you know? We want to be really lucky, we'll be a basketball player or something, make a bunch of money, you know.
Yeah, but then you got to be all skinny and work out. Screw that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to do that. Now I prefer the outer fringe of life, you know, the people are more interesting. And in tattooing, you get to meet all walks of life, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's the fun part. You can get a PhD and a serial killer at a convention. They all have something in common, you know.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing, you know.
Well, on that note, I feel like we have come pretty full circle. Rich, were there any other questions that you wanted to pop in here?
No, but is there anything... I know we talked about your Don Nolan book. You want to mention maybe where people can buy it when it comes out?
Well, I'll have it on Shopify. They can contact me. You know, I'm Dana Brunson on Instagram. I have a lot of followers. I meet people. You're welcome to message me anytime if I can help you out. I mean, I answer questions and, you know, I'm not some big historian. I'm just an older guy that's had fun doing this. But if you know, if you need a reference or you want to know what secret shit I use, I'm happy to tell you, you know, because people told me, you know, it really, when you let all that bullshit go, life's a lot easier, you know?
Yeah.
If you're secure, you know, I mean, you know, I can tell you the machines I use, the inks I use, the needles I use, and if it helps you, cool. But, you know, I just kind of keep using what I like, you know, and I'll recommend the people that I get it from. Because I've tried everything, you know, I've tried to be better, but, you know, you're only as good as you can be, so.
Right.
What shows or towns are you coming to soon or next,
well,
I should say?
Well, Cincinnati is whatever, next month or, yeah, May. And then, like I said, I'm going to Bristol, England. That's a really nice show. That's a couple hundred really top artists, kind of invitation only. And then I'm going to Amsterdam. My friend Gideon puts on. And then I'm going to Romania, which I've never been. Usually I go to Italy and UK every year. And I'll go to Philly and Chicago. Those, you know, Troy puts those on. Troy puts on a wonderful convention. Chicago just had like, I don't know, 40,000 walk-ins and 999 booths. You know, it's...
Wow.
I mean, it's more than tattooing, but it's a really fun event, and it's really well run. You know, he's got it down to a science, and
yeah.
Now everybody's jumping on the convention. I mean, there must be a convention every half hour somewhere.
Yeah.
And some of the small ones are really fun, you know. Yeah, it's just fun. You go and meet a few people, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, awesome.
And I'm still tattooing, you know, like I said, Dana Brunson on Instagram. You can just message me. It's Designs by Dana in Cincinnati. And, you know, we're the oldest shop, and we have a bunch of antique stuff in it. So if you're ever my way, just give us a holler, drop in, check it out.
To anyone who has listened this far, thank you very much. Dana, thank you very much for your time. We both really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dana.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure.
We'll catch you next time on Pull the Line.